Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Recently, the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights has been investigating the way colleges and universities from USC to Dartmouth to Yale handle sexual assault incidents that happen on campus. This fall, under Title IX, which is not just about women and not just about sports, it prohibits sex discrimination in education. Here to talk about it is Alexandra Brodsky, a writer for Feministing.com and an organizer for Know Your Nine. That's a legal education campaign against campus violence. Hi, Alexandra. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
And Alexandra is here in our studio. First, just so our listeners know the basics here, why is the federal government investigating so many universities on how they handle cases of sexual assault? And why now? Why is this coming to the fore now?
Sure. I mean, I guess first, the reason why the federal government is involved at all with school enforcement is that, and you know, people often ask, well, why aren't the police just dealing with this all on their own? And I think it's important to remember that, you know, the court system and the police deal with sexual violence as a criminal matter, but schools are involved to protect students' civil right to equal access to education. So if a student, you know, is being harassed by a professor or has been assaulted by a classmate and because of that isn't going to seminar or doesn't feel comfortable studying in the library, that's hurting their education. And so the department is involved to make sure that schools are doing enough to make sure that both violence is being prevented and that survivors are being accommodated in the aftermath of violence. But I think, you know, this isn't a new thing. It's not like suddenly someone invented rape on campus in the last couple of years. But I think it's really a snowball effect where each time someone comes forward, other students realize that they have options. And there's been a lot of really exciting, mostly online networking between schools saying, hey, I saw in the news that you filed this complaint. Can you help me do the same?
The internet, I think, and social media has really been an empowering tool because for decades there have been stories of assaults on campus where there has been little or no action taken against the perpetrator. Let's talk about the story at Occidental College in California. Why don't you tell? I mean, I can give a little background and then we'll have you weigh in. There was the accusation of an assault against several women. Someone found responsible for the assault and then graduating on time while one of the victims was traumatized and afraid even to return to school. Now, how common, and that's just one story, how common is that kind of story? And I would hope increasingly less so.
I mean, you know, it's always hard to tell frequency because I think that we're hearing a lot more about these stories now, but that's actually the first step to making sure that these rates are decreasing. So I don't think it's that this is becoming more prevalent, just more people are talking about it. And it's absolutely true that this story, this, you know, where the assailant continues with his or her education sort of uninterrupted and graduates with a great degree while the survivor is the one who bears the sort of like all of the repercussions of this violence. It's all too common, and we're seeing that at schools across the country. You know, one story that got a lot of attention in fall of 2012 was from Angie Epifano at Amherst, who's posted about being forcibly institutionalized by her school and then forced to leave Amherst in a student paper, and that really went, you know, viral. But I think that what we really see here and why one of the reasons this is so common is that schools across the country understand sexual violence as a PR problem, that they're concerned that if they acknowledge that there's violence on campus and they actually kick someone out, you know, heaven forbid, for raping or harassing or otherwise assaulting another student, that somehow this is going to hurt their application rate or somehow this is going to hurt alumni donations. But so I think that a lot of the work of this student activism is to really change the incentive structure so that actually it's a much bigger liability if you try to silence survivors and then they drag your name through the mud mm-hmm. in the media and they file a Title IX complaint against you with the federal government.
And now let's talk a little bit about the laws involved. There is Title IX. There is Know Your Nine, and that's the campaign. let's talk about Know Your Nine. What is that? How did it come about? And then I want to ask you about how Title IX is being used in this way.
Sure. So Know Your Nine is a mostly online legal education campaign centered around a website, knowyournine, that's ix.org. The idea here is to make sure that all students across the country know their rights under Title IX and both know the basics that Title IX covers sexual violence on campuses and also have access to really detailed legal information about their options if their schools aren't respecting those rights.
Because most people think Title IX is only about women's sports. Why does sexual assault fall under Title IX?
Right. No, that's a good point. Title IX is about equal access to education regardless of gender or sex. And, you know, it's very easy to see the connection between that and sports, but there's also really great work. There was really great work sort of in the 70s to establish the ways that harassment and assault made it harder for women to have the same college experiences as their male peers. Now, it's important to note that all students, male, female, gender nonconforming, are protected under Title IX. But I think this was originally pioneered as a really distinctly feminist tool to ensure that co-education was meaningful, that it wasn't just that, you know, a couple female students were allowed onto a campus, but that they were really full students in the same way that their male peers were.
And of course, men and gay and transsexual people are also victimized, and those assaults would also fall under Title IX.
Absolutely. And I think it's important, sort of a recent exciting development, which isn't specific to campus violence, but there was a recent decision by the Office for Civil Rights with a high school that showed that trans students are also specifically protected from being targeted by through discrimination because they are trans.
Now, there was... back in my day, I like to now be old enough to use that expression, the Clery Act, which required universities and I guess colleges also to report crimes on campus. But I think that would cut both ways because it would mean that colleges would not want crime to occur on their campus and therefore would push for underreporting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the Clery Act is still, I think, a really important tool for survivors and advocates, and it's recently been strengthened by a provision of the recent VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, reauthorization called the Campus Save Act, which now means that the Clery Act is a much sort of more agile tool for activists. But I think you're right that there's sort of this constant tension between schools saying, well, we know that we have these legal obligations to report, but we kind of don't want to know. You know, we're afraid that these statistics are going to make it into a paper and suddenly someone's mom is going to say, well, we don't want to hand over $40,000 in tuition.
And our child.
Yeah.
So let's talk specifically and give some concrete good advice for students going off to campus. If something does happen, and let's be realistic and grown up about it, you know, these are adult settings in adult places. Who best to call? We were talking earlier about campus police versus local police. Who does one call? Do you call, if you're at NYU, the NYPD or the campus police? Or let's say you're at Yale or Princeton, so you don't maybe think of NYPD because it's not as all-encompassing. Do you call campus police or do you call local police? What's the best course of action?
I think the advice that I've heard from both people who have gone through this personally and also who are trained to work with survivors is that you really want to call some sort of rape crisis center first. And that can either be most colleges have some sort of sexual assault resource center with 24/7 hotlines. And that's going there can give you a particularly good sense of what your options are on campus. But even if you are sure that you want to report to the police, if you go to a rape crisis center first, they can assign you an advocate who will help you, you know, get a rape kit done so that you know what to expect, so that they can be talking to doctors to make sure that you're comfortable. They can give you advice for dealing with the police because, you know, as much as we're sort of criticizing the university system here, I think it's also worth noting that the criminal justice system is not exactly friendly for survivors of sexual violence.
And each jurisdiction can be different. Some
absolutely.
University settings might be different than others.
Absolutely. But, I mean, the one thing that just a little self-promotional here. I apologize. But I really would encourage people also who are who have been assaulted on a campus to make sure that they know their rights under Title IX and under the Clery Act. Because the way that this project really got started is that many of us who were involved with campus anti-violence activism from a very personal space had recognized, well, you know, I wish, you know, now 2 years later, I'm able to file a complaint or I'm able to start protesting my university's policies because by chance I learned about Title IX. But what if I had known about that at the time? What if I had known when I was going into, you know, my hearing, when I was reporting to administrators, that they're not allowed to tell me not to formally report, that they're not allowed to tell me not to tell my friends and family? And I think that that's, you know, the law is really an incredibly powerful tool. Title IX is, I think, really, if used more widely, has the chance to really transform these campus environments.
Are campus environments changing? Are they becoming more oriented toward the victims and more open to these complaints and to hearing what young women and other victims have to say when they say it?
I really hope so. I mean, I think that what's happening now, that there are so many of these complaints, and that is that even those schools that don't have, you know, an official complaint with the Department of Education filed against them are getting nervous because they realize it's a possibility and they realize that they want to sort of shape up before that happens. I think, though, that there's still a lot of resistance because you have a lot of administrators making these decisions who are still really buy into a lot of myths about sexual violence. Like, well, you know, it was probably all just a misunderstanding. What I'm really hoping is that this action will lead to sort of immediate change, but also that as a new generation of faculty and administrators take power at these schools, that they will be able to bring, again, a greater knowledge of just how gender and sexism and violence really work.
You graduated from Yale, and I know you're going to the law school in the fall.
I am.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
The federal government, I believe, investigated Yale's policies in this regard. Do we have a result into that investigation?
Yeah. So in 2011, 15 classmates and I filed a complaint with the Department of Education. They took about a year to investigate. And, you know, I think that Yale made a lot of really great policy changes because of that investigation, and that's really the department's strong suit. But we really don't think that the department is enforcing the law in the way it needs to. So what it does at the end of almost all of these investigations is say, promise to do better in the future, and that's just not good enough.
Promise to do better in the future, not good enough, but the work you're doing is excellent. I thank you so much for being with us. Alexandra Brodsky, you can follow her on Twitter. And she is going off to Yale in the fall, but we'll consider her, continue her advocacy, feministing.com. Thank you so much for being here and for Know Your Nine.
Thank you.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and we'll be back in just a moment.